What's going on, everyone? My name is J.R. Robinson. And once again, I'd like to welcome you to When He Speaks Erotica, the podcast where I talk about relationships, love, sex, and everything under the umbrella, all from my perspective. As always, let me say thank you to everyone who listens and who supports the podcast. Tonight, I'm going to talk about finding passion within monogamy. Now, this may seem like an oxymoron, but I'm here to tell you that there is more than possible to keep the romance alive and bring back that spark in your relationship. Also, my question tonight is chivalry dead? So do me a favor, sit back, relax, and I'll be right back with the question. So the question tonight is chivalry dead? The act of chivalry is often thought of as an old-fashioned custom from a bygone era. However, there are those who believe that the practice of chivalry is still much alive and relevant today. So the question, once again, remains, is chivalry dead? Now, from my perspective, I'm not going to say it's dead, but it is dying of a slow death. It's slowly dying. But it, you know what it is? It's on life support. I'm going to look at it like that. Because it's still hanging around. There's still some men who will open doors, send flowers, be cordial, respectable, and appreciative of a good woman. That still exists. I've seen both in the younger generation and guys in my generation. So it's still hanging on. There's still some hope. And ladies, if you're looking for a man who has some type of thoughtfulness towards you, or who's attentive to your needs, and who's going to show a little chivalry, don't give up. Don't think that it doesn't exist, because it still does. You just have to, you know, move the weeds out the way and find it. You know what I'm saying? But there's still guys out here who will stand on their square and treat a woman the way she needs to be treated. And that's just my personal opinion. This question has been around for centuries, and it still lingers today. Chivalry is a code of conduct that has been passed down through the ages, one that is often associated with knights in shining armor and damsels in distress. Now, I like this analysis because when I was coming up, that's how I kind of saw myself. And people who were around me, certain guys who I hung out with, had it about them too. And when I went to the Navy, I saw a little bit of it also, where it looks good, or it has meaning when a man gets out his car, walks around to the passenger side, opens the door for his woman, holds out his hand, helps her out the car. That's impressive to me. That has so much meaning. It don't get no more respectable than that. I mean, it can, but that's one of those examples that I really pride myself. That was kind of like one of my blueprints as far as dating. Treating a woman with respect, and if need be, giving her my jacket, my coat, putting my coat in a puddle of water so she don't get her back then they have red bottoms, but her nice shoes wet. I love shit like that. I used to like the old black and white movies, the romantic movies, and maybe that's why I'm all fucking crazy with this. With this podcast, because I've been a romantic type person. person since a little kid, you know. But chivalry is very, it's impressive. It's always been impressive to me. You know, I've always believed in a man being a man, you know. And there's a lot of reasons why some men are not doing it, and I can go into it forever and a day. But I think most people who listen to this podcast understand that there are just some men who are not mentally equipped, or they choose not to be chivalrous. And it's sad, because the smallest, I know I've said this many times, the smallest gesture can mean so lot, can mean so much to a woman. Let me say that again. The smallest thing that you do for a woman, if you bring a woman flowers, okay, personal experience. I brought someone flowers, and I got a home-cooked Sunday meal cooked for me. Because I was going, you know, just drop the flowers off and say, I'll see you later on. She's like, no, have a seat. Got in the kitchen, put the thing around her head, the little bandana around her head, rolled up her sleeves, and cooked me a Sunday dinner because I brought her flowers. And it wasn't no play on. It wasn't me, you know, trying to just get with her. It was because I really did like her, and I was just being thoughtful, you know? I wanted to make her day. I wanted to make her smile, and I made her do more than smile. We did some other things, too. You know what I'm saying? But it was a great day just because I brought her some flowers. Today, women are more independent than ever before. And sometimes that can make it difficult to tell if a man is going to be chivalrous or not. And I think with that, men feel like they are in competition when a woman is, when a woman has power, when a woman is a CEO of her own business, when she's a thriving entrepreneur, when she's a principal at a high school, when she has some type of status, some men feel threatened. They don't know how to handle, how to accept that that woman is equally as powerful, or she's on his level. And that's kind of crazy to me, because we are all equal, both men and women. You got some men who are a little bit strong, you got some women who are a little bit smarter, but at the end of the day, we're equals. So to be in a relationship, or to like someone, or to want to pursue someone, and then decide not to, or get scared, or bitch out because she's, you know, a woman of power or a woman of substance, is a weak excuse for a man. I've always thought that women are just as smart, just as strong, just as mentally prepared. Now, I'm not going to say all, but I've seen my share of strong women who can stand up and hold their own against any man. But when it comes to men seeing that and feeling threatened, then they don't want to be thoughtful. They don't want to be attentive. They ain't trying to be chivalrous. Because in their minds, like, shit, she like me. But still, there are some gentlemen out there that will see this as a challenge. And I guess until they change their thought process or get away from that way of thinking, they're going to continue to be that way. Everybody is not going to be what you need. Some people provide good conversation, or some people provide good loving, or some people. There's not that many. You're not going to come across that many people who has every single thing, or everything, or close to what it is that you need in a relationship. And that's when it's your decision to decide, okay, am I going to deal with this, or I'm going to wait and see if there's going to be a man who's more attentive. Can't wait too long, though, sisters. Wait too long, and next thing you know, you're leaving this earth. So you gotta pick and choose how you gonna choose someone, or how you gonna come across someone who has the ingredients that you're looking for. And if the ingredients are someone who's chivalrous, then stick to your guns, because it means something to you to have that element in a relationship. So don't settle. Don't just accept anything. Don't have a piece of man when you know you can have a half a man or a whole man. I mean, you shouldn't really settle on a half a man either, or half a person. But I think a half is a whole lot better than a piece. So, why are men expected to be shippers? I think it's a situation that goes back to, you know, the early centuries, and it's been trickled down to this generation, or to the previous generations. That's how a man's supposed to be. He's supposed to, you know, control and protect his woman. And I know control is a bad word to use, but back then, there were a lot of men who controlled or ran the household. Their word was law. And a woman just went along, had babies, took care of the house, cooked, and accepted everything that a man said. But like I said, that day has changed. It's like, look, we equal 50-50, or we split down the middle. There are other explanations for why this expectation persists, but it is an interesting question worth exploring further. And I think that's on like an individual basis, you know what I'm saying? Do women really want men who are chivalrous? I think most women do. You know, I feel like today it's common for women to say that they want a man who is chivalrous. But is that what they really mean? And for the most part, I think, yeah, a lot of women do want that type of man, do want someone who will be there and, you know, everything associated with chivalry, he can provide. Why has it declined? Why has chivalry declined? It goes back to, I think it's, women don't hold men accountable. I can say a whole lot of shit, but when it comes down to it, that's my strong belief that if you don't make him see you for who you are as a woman, don't let him create you into his image. You already been who you are before he came into your life, unless you grew up with him. If someone just comes into your life for the first time and he needs you to, you know, think like he needs you to think, that might not be a good thing, you know. To wrap this up, I think for the future, chivalry is going to be it's going to be hard to come by. And that's just my personal opinion. I think there are so many men who don't understand the aspect of being chivalrous and are not really trying to explore that journey. They're not really trying to come to that point where they are willing to be respectable or be kind. I mean, something simple as being kind to you. That can be hard for me. But I honestly think that even though chivalry might be dead, it's certainly not forgotten. And on that note, I'll be right back with my topic of the night. So my topic of the night is finding passion within monogamy. Everyone's idea of a perfect marriage is different, but many of us struggle with keeping our marriage alive and interesting over time. Tonight I want to share a story that was told to me by someone, and we knew the person, and to protect the person's name, they gave me different names, so I'm going to give you the names that they gave me. So, Tommy and Jane, the sex between Tommy and Jane had become, you know, like a routine. They had this thing where they kissed, caressed, and finished. And Tommy was resigned to enduring that dull, mechanical existence until Jane, his wife, dropped her bombshell. Jane had been having an affair. So things change. Everything changed. And instead of it being a negative, it became a positive. Sex had now become a mixture of discovery and forbidden pleasure. They started to explore each other's bodies in a different way and with a different vibe, daring themselves to go further than before. Tommy found himself aroused by Jane's transgressions, as if her infidelity added an edge to the intimacy that they've been missing before. So they learned secrets about each other that they didn't know existed, and even the familiar vibe that they had became exciting again. So what they did was, it was as if Jane's affair sparked something inside of Tommy, where, you know, he suddenly started to crave that thrill that only she could provide. He didn't want another woman. He wanted his woman who had been with someone else. As he began to succumb to his own dark desires, Tommy slowly realized to prevent his marriage from falling apart, he would have to find a way to deal with and tame his new found passions. So, I heard this story 20 years ago, and this was like an older, they were a little bit older than some of my family members, but I know who it was. You didn't even have to tell me that, I knew exactly who it was. And that story stayed with me for years. And, you know, I kind of like to put it down. I tried to say it the way I remember it being told to me. And I added my own little whatever. But it's a true story. A woman having an affair was a positive. Now, for years, that has been in my head. And I haven't been able to wrap my head around how that's a positive. But like I said, different strokes for different folks, and that's one hell of a stroke. And I want to really get into that. I really want to talk about it, but I know the person. I know them. One of them isn't here with us now, but out of respect, I'm going to keep it. I'm going to dilute it, and I'm not going to give you that what I know. But to have heard this 20 some years ago, and to hear that it was a positive, I don't get it. I don't get it, because I don't know if he was. I don't want to say weak. I don't want to call him. That's one thing I don't want to do is say weak. But he had to be betrayed. He had to feel some betrayal and hurt. And that lack of trust, because your woman don't let somebody skeet off in her. Come back and make and convince you that, hey, it was a good thing. It made our marriage better.
No. No, 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 no. But then I look at it like this. Is he a better man than me? Am I the weaker man for not being able to forgive and to look at it in a more positive way? And by no means am I weak at all. I'm one of the strongest motherfuckers you're going to come across. Verbally, mentally, I got hands, whatever. I'm all man. But I know how to question myself. I know how to step out of my shoes and step into someone else's shoes. And to step into those shoes, I would feel confused and overwhelmed with a range of emotions. I mean, everything with me would go from anger to probably grief if it was me. You know, I think at times he found it difficult to rebuild his trust with his wife. And I think the betrayal could have been compounded by the fact that his wife broke their sacred trust, their sacred bond of marriage. Did he struggle to forgive her? I don't know. But he had to have that, you know, that talk with himself, because he saw fit to save his marriage, even though he knew what she did. It's likely that the marriage probably changed dramatically. She probably was, you know, apologetic, remorseful, and the trust, you know, because, you know, that trust between them was broken. And it took work. It had to take work for them to continue on and rebuild that marriage and that trust, and to move forward with a new level of understanding and respect for one another. Had to. That takes work. You got to prepare yourself to do that. You got to mentally prepare yourself to say, you know what, I'm going to forgive her. Because her tricking off has added some excitement in the bedroom. Now, I don't know if it was the fact that he knew that someone was with his wife that turned him on. I don't know. We never had the conversation. I only knew through someone else. And I would see him. I would see him at functions and, you know, out in the club. And I was drunk one night. I was pissy drunk. And I wanted to say, Tommy, what the fuck, man? But I think my brothers, because, you know, once I told my brothers about the situation, we had the conversation. So whenever we went out, whenever me and my brothers went out, one of us had to be sober. Two could get fucked up, but one had to be sober. So my sober brother, he probably kept me in, and he probably prevented me from asking him. You know what I'm saying? Because my brother was like right next to me. As if, don't do it. I could feel his elbow coming in my chest. Don't do it. You know what I'm saying? Because I was fucked up. And I wanted to know, but I never said anything. Never did. But yeah, you have to have a lot of work in order to want to move on with someone that you know, that knowingly cheated on you more than once. More than once. Because he was in the service. He was in the army. So when he would go out, someone would come in. I really wanted to talk to them because I wanted to get both of their perspectives. I'm sorry. I wanted to get both of their perspectives of the situation. It got so deep for me like that. I wanted to know what the fuck they was thinking. And I know what she was thinking. I know what she was thinking. Everybody know what she was thinking. But for him, someone I knew, someone who had been around my family, been around my friends, someone who I had a connection with, I wanted to see if he was okay. I wanted to ask him, yo, you want to talk about that? But I couldn't. I had to hold that secret. I had to keep that to me. And I wanted to know both of their perspectives, the cheater and the one who got cheated on. I wanted to know if she had any guilt, any shame, or regrets for what she done, or was it business as usual? I messed up, so, you know, forgive me, and let's move on. You want some of this pussy? Did he have a sense of relief, knowing the truth? Did he feel good that his woman told him, yeah, I messed up. I was sleeping with someone while you was gone. Did he feel good about that? Because I'm like, okay, at what point do you become okay with that and move forward? Now, don't get me wrong. There have been some people who have taken me back. Some women who have taken me back. And I didn't question it. I was glad that they took me back. You know what I'm saying? And selfish and narrow-minded. But we ain't talking about me. We talking about Tommy and Jay. But seriously, though, it's like, when it's you, you just want to get past the hurt, the betrayal, the, you know, the negative looks. You know what I'm saying? You just want everything to be all right. But when it's somebody you know and you don't know all the details and you're curious, you become like a detective. You got to know everything. And that's where I was at in my life. I wanted to know what the fuck. What was it about her that made him accept that another man skeeted? Or it could have been multiple. I don't know how many it was. I know it was one dude. But through the grapevine, I heard it was more than one. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, okay. You know, but what was she thinking? At no point did she not. Okay. I've been told that some women, when their man is away, like in the service, their whole mentality changes. They go from being hurt or upset or, you know, missing that person to needing whatever warm body that they can get. And I'm not saying all women, but I've heard from a couple of women that when loneliness sets in, anybody can get it. And I'm talking about women who are in the church, women who claim to be strong women but felt weak because their man been gone for like a couple of months, 4 months, 2 months, a month, 30 days, 2 weeks, and they spread their legs open. Men are the same way. There's some men who are stay-at-home moms, get caught up out there, you know. And do you think about what that person who's being cheated on, do you ever think about what they're thinking? What they're doing, what they feel, what they will feel if they knew that you was giving up the dugout, that you was giving up dick? Do cheaters ever think like that? I didn't. Maybe once or twice. It probably crossed my mind once or twice. Out of the several times I cheated, but I didn't really think about it. It was all about me, busting mine, getting mine, going to sleep, going about my day. And I guess that, and I guess that's what most people go through. Most people have that selfish gene, like, whatever. As long as I bust a nut, I'm good. I think it's important that you find a way to not let infidelity control your whole shit, control your relationship, disturb or disrupt or break up the relationship. And I know that's crazy for me to say, being an admitted cheater. And I guess that comes with time and wisdom. As I get older, I can see it more differently and from a total different lens. There's no way in the world I would put myself in a position with the woman I'm with and with someone else. At this point in my life, it's too much. It takes a lot out of you. And it takes a lot out of the person that you're with, the one that who you have committed to and said that you're gonna stand strong with. You have to, at some point, you have to realize that you're causing a lot of confusion, sadness, anger, betrayal, hurt, and everything else negative to that person that you're cheating on. Everybody's not like Tommy and Jane. Everybody can't forgive and forget and move on for X amount of years. That's a rare breed to find two people who can accept infidelity, continuous infidelity, and live a life of happiness and bliss. I know for me, I would probably bring that shit up every time my woman go out the door. I'm like, yo, where you going? Where you been? Why you answer your phone? Let me see your phone. I don't know if I should salute them or continue to think about it, because it's been on my mind. It's been on my mind for a minute. And whenever I tell stories about people I know, I have the backing. Even though I try to put it in a way, I don't give their names. Unless you took me for $248, then I might call your name. But when it comes to certain stories or certain real life situations I've experienced or I know about, I'm kind of cautious with putting names and identities out there. But when it came to Tommy and Jane, it's funny I'm using those two names, Tommy and Jane. Because when dude was telling me, I'm like, yo, Tommy, who? He's like, bro, you know, I'm just going to give you Tommy and Jane, bro. That's all you get. And then when I found out, I'm like, okay. So it's just weird that when it comes to names, it's hard to, it can be difficult to speak about it. But if it's on my mind, if it's something pertaining to something that I can use in my podcast, I'm gonna do it. And like I said, it's been on my mind for a minute. Cause I think the thing is, there's so many stories that I could tell. But I would honestly have to like flip names and flip, you know, situations and cities and towns and time frames and all that to keep certain people who might listen to this podcast out of my ear or out of my face about, you know, that happened around the time we were together. You know what I'm saying? So I'm very cautious. I try to be very cautious when I tell the stories or tell the situations that actually happened in my life. You know what I'm saying? But there are still some more that I will, you know, talk about. But when it comes to this particular situation, I think that is one of those things where it's doable to find passion with being with one person. I truly believe that even though that happened with them, and it's a questionable situation, still, they found a way to make it work. They found a way to be happy and to, you know, take care of their family. But they had kids, and they had kids who grew up and had kids, and, you know, just recently one on passed, you know, I think it took a couple of years ago. And the family's still doing all right, but to have your woman admit that she was with someone else and you take her back and you have a successful and beautiful family and a beautiful life, very rare for me to have experienced that. But on that note, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up this podcast. My alarm just went off, so if you hear it during the podcast, just don't pay no attention, because I'm not going back after 20-some minutes and redo this podcast. But once again, I want to say thank you to everyone who listens to the podcast and who accept who I am when it comes to this podcast. And know that I can only do it the way I do it, you know. I'm not perfect, but I'm doing what I want to do, doing what I like to do. And I really appreciate the people who support this podcast, who listen to the truck drivers, to the nurses, to family members, to people who I may have gotten with, to old homeboys. Hey, good looking. Thank you. Continue to listen, support, share the podcast, subscribe, you know, and check out the book, Heart Seduction. I haven't said too much about it lately, but it's a small ebook. It might be 10, 12, 13 pages, but it's my first book. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble's bookstore. And I want to say Google Bookstore, if I'm not mistaken. The name of the book is Heart Seduction by J.R. Robinson. Small ebook. Check it out. My first time publishing a book. And it's a good read. Good read. Anything you want me to talk about, anything you want to say, anything you want to critique me on, as long as you're respectable, hit me up at whenhespeakserotica@gmail.com. And just be safe out here in these streets, man. The holidays are coming up. And just be mindful of who you're around and who you're with. And take care of yourselves. And I'll talk to you next week. Peace.